The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. This content is created in partnership with our sponsor, IOOF Investment Management Limited, IIML, ABN 53006 695 021, AFSL 230524. IIML is the trustee of the IOOF Portfolio Service Superannuation Fund, ABN 708153698. IIML is part of the Insignia Financial Group, which consists of Insignia Financial Limited, ABN 491001037222, and its related bodies corporate, and is limited to publicly available information. Before acting on any general advice, you should consider whether appropriate and obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license and does not provide any financial advice or services or endorse any general advice. If a PDS or IM exists, you should obtain a copy and review it thoroughly before making a decision.
Welcome to this Ensemble series on rethinking retirement, advice, outcomes, and conversations, exploring new IRIS products and opening up the discussion on how to have better conversations with clients about their retirement. My name is Tanya Carlson. I'm the founder and principal advisor at Amplify Wealth Management, a boutique advice firm working closely with professionals and SMEs in the pre-retirement and retirement phase, and I'll be your host. We are going to be joined by experts and advisors in this series. We know that retirement is changing, and advisors really want to hear from other advisors on what they're doing and how they're bringing about these discussions. So let's dive in.
MLC Expand is the super and retirement platform built by advisors for advisors. It's an award-winning wrap designed to unlock potential for you and your clients. Intuitive and easy to use, MLC Expand streamlines advice delivery with simple account creation and powerful transaction capabilities, helping you maximize efficiency while giving your clients access to a comprehensive menu of high-quality investment options and the new innovative retirement income stream solution, MLC Retirement Boost. For more information, visit myexpand.com.au.
Okay, welcome to episode 3. Australia is standing on the edge of one of the biggest financial transitions in history. Over the next decade, we're going to see around 3 million Australians retiring and accessing approximately $1.2 trillion in super savings. And we've had a very robust super system. It's been incredibly successful at helping people build their wealth. But the real challenge is what comes next and turning that super into sustainable income streams. MLC has released a white paper, Riding the Retirement Wave, and this is exploring this challenge in depth. And we want to talk about that a bit today, sort of the demographic shifts we're seeing, retiree confidence, the risks that we see as advisors to retirees, future needs. And central to this shift is some of the government policies that involve innovative retirement income streams, or IRIS products, as we like to abbreviate everything. So today I'm joined with Ashton Jones, Director of Customer Innovation MLC, and Harry Flaskus, Advisor and Director of Atlas Wealth Advisory. Welcome, guys.
Hi, Tanya. Great to be here.
Great to have this conversation. So let's start broadly, I guess. The paper is sort of suggesting that the superannuation system in Australia has been really successful at building people's retirement savings, but then we see retirement income being a challenge. Maybe this one's for you, Ashton. Why are we seeing this shift now rather than maybe 10 years ago or even 20 years ago?
Yeah, well, thank you, Tanya. As I said, it's great to be here. If I think about why are we meeting the moment now? It's really about three factors. One is one that you touched on, just the sheer number of people that are going to retire over the next decade. You know, you said 3 million Australians, approximately $1.2 trillion of super over the next decade. The industry has been anticipating this moment for quite some time. And the moment's here is the reality. The second thing is when you take a step back and you look at Australia as a nation, we do have an aging population. And because of medical advances, because of actual the success of Australia as a nation, people are living longer and longer than ever. Average life expectancy is going up. You know, for an Australian retiring Today, the average life expectancy, depending on whether they're male or female, is somewhere between 85 to 88. But that means about 50% of the population will actually live well beyond that age. That's how averages work. 50% make it to that age, 50% don't. And then the third reason why this has really come into focus is policymakers and regulators have been really concerned about Australians consuming their superannuation balances in retirement because of the economic impact if older Australians don't feel confident to spend. Like if you think about superannuation, it was really set up to deliver retirement income, right? That is the purpose of superannuation. And so policymakers and regulators have been really focused on what do we need to do to make Australians feel confident to spend. Because if Australians feel confident to spend, it's good for the economy, it's good for Australians. And so it's really those three things together, more people retiring than ever before, Australians living longer, and really wanting Australians to feel confident to spend in retirement.
Okay, well, that's a really interesting point. And I know this, we'll probably keep coming back to this. We did in other discussions as well. I think it's a really big factor, certainly from the advice community. I think we see that confidence being an issue. The paper particularly highlights that around a third of Australians feel financially confident, advise clients significantly more confident. In fact, pretty much double by those numbers. So Harry, in your experience, what's driving the confidence gap, do you think?
Yeah, thanks, Tanya. So I think for most retirees, they have worked for almost 40 years to get to retirement. And all they really know is how to save, whether it be for their first home, a holiday, kids' education, and more importantly, towards their retirement. So it comes to no surprise they are feeling like this. Now, Australians significantly underestimate longevity risk, misunderstand sequencing risk, and fear inflation without knowing how to manage it. And that uncertainty lowers confidence.
Definitely true. Definitely true. I think, you know, sequencing risk is something that we read about. Maybe it's going to start coming back into the headlines now. We've had pretty good run in markets for the last couple of years. And certainly if you're a younger advisor, maybe it's been some time since you've seen any long periods of being down because COVID, even though we got a big shock at that time, the rebound was pretty quick. Going back to GFC times, sadly, I was around in those days, but many people weren't, or they're just sort of not used to what that can feel like. Ashton, what do you think is critical for people to understand about that sequencing risk, in particular those early years when you're retiring, I guess the period just before and just after when you first retire? What's involved there?
Our listeners are pretty sophisticated, Tanya, but I'm going to go back to basics if it's okay. Like when people talk about sequencing risk, what they're really talking about is that the sequence of investment returns actually matters quite a lot in terms of your overall outcomes. And for a lot of retirees, if some bad years occur very early in their retirement, i.e. if you had a GFC-style event immediately after someone retired, it can have an outsized impact on their overall retirement income, their overall retirement outcomes. Because once you've stopped working and once you are no longer contributing money into an account, you're really fully reliant on the account being invested well for the long term. Mm. And so if you have a really bad couple of years of returns early in retirement when you're no longer contributing, when you're starting to draw money out of your account, it crystallizes some of those losses and you don't have the opportunity to kind of rebound and allow the account to be invested for the inevitable long-term improvement in your investment outcome. So when you kind of do the numbers, there's a couple of things that are quite stark. About 60% of actual lifetime investment returns are actually earned in the retirement phase. So it's about 60% of the overall return. So being invested in the market and having good growth exposure as an older Australian is actually really important because a lot of retirement income actually is earned in your retirement years.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that's important is if you haven't kind of thought about how you manage that sequencing risk during that transition period, Some other factors can really amplify the effect of sequencing risk. And so one of those factors is longevity risk, right? So if you live longer than you expect, your money needs to last a lot longer. And if you've had some bad years early on, the pot of money you have to live off is smaller just when you need it most, because you're going to have to make it last longer. So it has, longevity risk has sort of an amplifying effect on sequencing risk. And so managing those two things together is often really front of mind for financial advisors when they're supporting retirees in that transition phase.
Where do you think, or why don't traditional strategies, the things that the tools we've been using for the last few years, sort of fall short, I guess, or don't always solve this issue, sequencing risk, longevity risk?
Yeah, like I'd probably love to hear as well from Harry around some of the strategies that he's been implementing for his clients. But maybe just at a high level, I think it's really something that Harry touched on, right? Which is, we've kind of primed consumers, we've also primed the industry and the system as a whole to really focus on accumulating the largest balance possible at retirement. And the sort of methodologies that people use in order to accumulate balances are pretty consistent regardless of people's individual circumstances. Like, most Australians need to be invested in very good quality growth exposed assets for most of their accumulation phase. But as more and more Australians are getting to that really critical moment of navigating the complexity of retirement, there's more risk factors that start to come into focus other than just market risk. And I think that that's really what you're seeing now is people getting more sophisticated about managing those risks in the transition phase and in the early phase of retirement. But Harry, I'd love to hear from you around some of the strategies you might be implementing for your clients.
Yeah, so I think traditionally we always, move towards your account-based pension, where a client retires and we roll over the superannuation to an account-based pension, and then we set a specific drawdown to meet the income needs. I guess the landscape has changed over the years, and it is changing now with a retirement covenant. So there are new investment solutions, new products available for advisors to help mitigate some of these risks which retirees face. Now, we see IRIS really complements and not really replaces the existing tools. So we generally use a layering strategy. We may recommend an IRIS solution, an account-based pension, and other investments to provide sustainable income towards a client's retirement.
How do you bring up those conversations, Harry? You mentioned a layering approach, and I think it's really interesting. I've had several conversations this week with various people, and the word a retirement philosophy keeps coming up. And it feels like this is like a new conversation. We've talked about investment philosophies and all sorts of philosophies for years, but now we're talking about a retirement philosophy, and you sort of touched on that layering strategy. How do you sort of start talking about that with your clients?
Yeah, so it's really depending on the client's circumstances and, of course, the client's goals. I think it's important as a practice, and we do work on these philosophies around how we can help our clients achieve their retirement needs. So if looking at a retirement philosophy, I think at a practice level, it means practices need to have a consistent income layering framework, a clear philosophy on super into retirement and how that income is produced, and perhaps templates for explaining the trade-offs to clients as well. So as financial planners, I think we're very privileged to have a lot of tools which can support the work we do for our clients. And this is where we've partnered up with perhaps product providers such as Expand or MLC. They give advisors the right tools so we can at least educate the clients around their options.
Yeah, I think those frameworks are so important, aren't they? Because it's hard sometimes to get your sort of words right when you're talking about clients' needs.
Yeah, it's sort of great to hear how simply kind of Harry's able to explain the good components of a retirement philosophy. It's definitely been sort of the approach that we've been taking from MLC Expand when we go out and speak to advisors, is really try to reinforce this concept that you don't need to overhaul your business models, or you don't need to overhaul your existing philosophies in order to put in place some really impactful basic rules around your retirement income philosophy. And Harry touched on a few concepts there, like income layering. It's actually quite easy to conceptualize how certain strategies that advisors are using in the accumulation phase can translate well to the retirement phase. So investment bucketing becomes income layering, right? Like a really easy way to reconceptualize it. And if you sort of document it that way and think through it in that lens, then naturally you start to think about, well, how do I manage the specific risks of retirement? Sequencing, market, inflation, longevity, emotional risk. And the different income layers can serve different purposes. Some of those layers might be more focused towards managing sequencing risk and longevity risk, whereas the other layers are more focused on how do I maximize my clients' retirement income? How do I give them enough capital access so that if they have unexpected life events, they can access money on demand? So income layering, I think, is a really powerful way to kind of start that journey of what's my retirement income philosophy and what are the different layers do for my clients depending on their circumstances.
Yeah, I found it really helpful when I read the report because I think bucketing is something that we've been using for a long time, but it focuses on asset allocation. But the layering sort of had, I guess, four main layers. And, you know, I guess we can talk about maybe what those layers are, but there was the basic needs sort of layer, the contingency layer. Maybe that's where we're addressing things like sequencing or longevity risk, discretionary layer. So, you know, I guess there's all these retirees now wanting to travel the world for a lot longer than we've, you know, seen before. And then we've got a legacy layer, which I thought was really interesting as well, because I guess that's another conversation piece that we're seeing happen more regularly, right, Harry?
Yeah, that's correct. And one thing which we tend to focus on with our clients is we focus a lot on the financial modeling and we can really articulate the value for our advice and the benefits of this layering strategy. So Tanya touched on earlier about the different levels of income a client needs, and that could be the specific needs, the wants, it could be discretionary spending as well. And we're able to really show the value for our advice when we're doing the financial modeling and using the tools to really show the value for our advice.
So when you're looking at the modeling and you're going through how this layering approach can help give the client some confidence around this. We talked before about the fact that many people don't feel confident to spend. And one of the scary stats that I think advisors know very well, and we see this talked about, but I don't think it gets talked about enough in the headlines, to be honest, is, you know, there's a lot of retirees that die with a big majority of their wealth still intact. They're just not confident to spend their money. So when you're modeling these numbers, I mean, how do you see the impact to a client's confidence? Does that show them something straight away, or are they still saying, oh, I don't quite believe this?
Yeah, look, it's interesting because the white paper also talks about advised clients and they're much better off in terms of financial confidence to go ahead and spend the money in retirement. And there's a massive discrepancy between unadvised clients and advised clients. I think one of the key benefits is when a client comes to our office, they sit down, we get a deeper understanding around the goals, the objectives, and really give them the confidence to know that they can go in and spend their retirement savings. So if they ask us, well, Harry, can I take that holiday next year or upgrade my car in 5 years' time? We can look at the financial modeling to tell them that, yes, they should be able to go out and spend the money, have the confidence to know that they can live retirement to the fullest.
Yeah. And I think I've definitely seen a number of advisors that we've gone out and we've sort of sat with and taken them through some of the tools that we've made available through the MLC Expand Center of Excellence. They found it a really great engagement opportunity pre-retirement. A lot of people do start to think about, what do I want to get out of my retirement? What are the different activities I want to do in the early phase? And just knowing that your advisor's thinking about the different income layers promotes a lot of confidence in retirees because a lot of things can happen unexpectedly, right? Even in retirement, right? Some of the statistics around divorce rates in retirement are actually quite astounding. True. And when those things happen, knowing that you've got not just an advisor that's looking out for you, but also already a layer of income that's designed for those unexpected things that life throws at you, I think is a really powerful way that advisors have been able to promote confidence in people. Because if you know you've got a pot of money there that's designed for when things go wrong, you have more confidence to use the other pots of money that you've had set aside by your advisor to enjoy retirement.
Yeah, that's true, actually. When do you start having these conversations, Harry? I mean, it feels like we traditionally would sit down with a client when they're, you know, 58, 60, starting to talk about the next 2 to 3 years I'm going to retire. And we might talk about, you know, contributions and building up super and all these sorts of things, but we don't really talk about their needs in retirement or the change, the shift from being this accumulator, madly saving money for our eventual retirement to this decumulation phase, which just terrifies clients. When do you start bringing this up? How do you do it? When should we be doing it? I mean, is there a noticeable shift that you're now doing it earlier?
Yeah, look, we are holistic advisors, Tanya. So we like to look at a client's position very early on. So even in the 30s, it's very common
yeah, wow.
we still have this discussion around putting the right measures in place from now to make retirement achievable. So it's very common as we are recommending to our younger clients to start salary sacrificing, to start putting money towards the super, making sure they're investing in line with their investment goals, their objectives. So we believe that the sooner you start to plan for something, the more achievable it is as well. Now, I think sometimes when clients come to see us 2-3 years out before retirement, sometimes it's too late.
Yeah.
We can't just wave a magic wand and make things happen.
Yeah,
so it's a matter of planning for retirement. And the sooner they start to plan for it, the more achievable it is.
Mm. And one of the conversations I've definitely seen a lot of advisors starting to have with their earlier clients is around how you could maximize your entitlements at retirement. I think, you know, a lot of clients who are at that younger age, like I've got an 18-year-old daughter. She doesn't want to have anything to do with superannuation, to be quite honest. But when you go and sit down with a client and talk to them about their financial goals, ask them a question, you know, I'm thinking about your retirement. Do you want to maximize your entitlements? Do you want to maximize your options? If we were to switch on an IRA solution, here's what it could do for you and the choices it could give you at retirement. A lot of advisors, I think, are sort of switching on now to the opportunity around at least considering an IRIS earlier because of the social security benefits and because of the other benefits it gives clients later.
Yes.
And the earlier that you start thinking about some of these solutions, the more that you can potentially benefit.
So these IRIS solutions can improve income by up to 60%. I mean, that's enormous difference, especially for somebody with a modest retirement sort of amount. That impact can be particularly dramatic for them. Like really the difference between, you know, giving up your dinners out and your bits and pieces to actually having a really comfortable life. And actually also, Ashton, you touched on this before when you said 60% of returns, and I may not have captured this correctly, but are sort of coming from the retirement phase. So these are really important conversations to be having with clients and getting them to understand, because I don't think a lot of advisors really understand that either. I don't think we do enough modeling on where these returns come from and then therefore the impact of a boost in income. Is that something that you are now showing people, Harry? Is that sort of where you talk about the modeling and you can really demonstrate this impact of this uplift in income?
Yeah, that's correct, Tanya. So looking at Expand, for example, they do have this retirement bonus. And the way that's calculated is that any investment earnings above Centrelink steaming rates forms part of this retirement bonus. Now, that retirement bonus upon retirement or when they reached 65 can be one of those IRIS solutions converted to a retirement pension, which carries a lot of Centrelink benefits. Now, with those Centrelink benefits, it may allow a client to receive an age pension much sooner or to maximize the age pension entitlements over their life expectancy as well. So we are starting to model those type of scenarios for our clients where they can see the benefit for our advice.
And what about clients that might be eligible for Centrelink? Is there still some benefit for them? Are they finding that still provides that confidence of income?
Yeah, look, we can explore other options for them, such as lifetime annuities or these liquid lifetime annuities, which have similar Centrelink benefits as the IRIS solutions. So it's quite common we do recommend these type of investments where only 60% of the purchase price is accessible under the assets test for Centrelink. So once again, it offers a lot more Centrelink benefits, tax benefits, allows clients to be confident in their retirement to be able to spend the money in retirement.
And I think, you know, Tanya and Harry, what we're definitely seeing, I think, is the way in which advisors sort of start to use these solutions is definitely the no-brainer scenarios where it's going to dramatically improve Centrelink outcomes for clients. But as they start to get more familiar with the solutions, there's a number of other use cases that start to come into focus. We definitely see more and more clients that would like that confidence that they're going to have some income in the later phase of life, but maybe they don't want an annuity. They want to know that they remain invested in the markets, and IRISs are really great for that because they're now platform enabled. They've got access to the full super and pension menu. But for clients that want that confidence they're going to get income for life, having a small allocation to an IRIS can be a great way to get the best of both worlds. The other scenario that we're definitely seeing a lot more of, coming back to what I spoke about earlier, is there's quite a few clients that are already in retirement that already have an account-based pension, but they could get better Centrelink outcomes if they were to take up a small allocation to an IRIS. Or if the situation changes in retirement, I had an advisor recently whose client's spouse had passed away. They went from being Centrelink tested as a couple to as an individual. They were going to lose their age pension entitlement altogether. And the client was quite distressed by that because it meant they wouldn't get their discounted pharmaceuticals. They would have to give up their government healthcare card, and just a small allocation to an IRIS once again allowed them to have that continuity of those different features and benefits. So I think it's increasingly, I think advisors are starting to think about what are the different client scenarios where these solutions can have an impact. You know, start with the Centrelink benefits, but then let's see where else it can make a difference in your client portfolio.
So Harry, I mean, what are the clients that you think benefit most from IRIS solutions? Is it those sort of Centrelink clients? What are the benefits that you're seeing day to day with your clients, large and small? It doesn't really matter if it's just a confidence benefit. I think we'd consider that significant, even though it's probably more an emotional or behavioral style. But what are you seeing from your conversations and as people are starting to retire?
I'd probably say three different type of clients in this environment. The first one, which you touched on already, are clients worried about outliving their retirement money. And this is some type of longevity anxiety. So IRIS solutions provide income for life, easing the fear of running out of superannuation. It also gives retirees permission to spend the money, knowing there's a regular income coming in for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
The other type of clients would be those clients who want to maximize the age pension. It would probably see a bit of a sweet spot with balances between $700,000 to about $1.2 million, where it can really add some value to help clients maximize the age pension entitlements.
Yeah, okay.
The last one we're seeing is probably risk-averse clients who fear market risk.
And
something
yes.
which you touched on earlier, with the way the current market conditions are, it's probably common for clients to feel very uncomfortable around investing growth assets. And this is where we can try and mitigate or minimize this sequence risk for them.
Yeah, that's a really good point because I think, as I said earlier, we haven't seen poor returns for some time. Volatility even feels like it hasn't been a big deal. Now we're sort of getting into some volatile market conditions. Those people who have recently just retired or perhaps are still in those early stages of retirement where they've gotten comfortable to market conditions being strong and now going to have those concerns sort of bubble up. And so that's going to be a real benefit to them having those products in place that are going to give them the confidence. What about the sort of negatives, Harry? What do you hear are the common objections or maybe not even objections, just the concerns that clients might raise with you when you first start talking about IRIS or even lifetime income products? I think the traditional annuities similarly have some concerns by clients. What do you hear regularly?
Yeah, and they certainly do. I think the most common objection we get is, I don't want to lock money away, which is quite common. I guess clients worry about losing access to the capital. They may associate these lifetime income options with the older style irreversible annuities. And sometimes they want liquidity for emergencies or health shocks
or
just helping family. So clients are a bit reluctant to be locking money away for the period of time. Yeah, mm-hmm. As a rule of thumb, the exposure we have towards these IRIS solutions may be around 10 to 30% of the total investable funds. So it's really a small part of their retirement savings, which would be invested in this type of investment solutions, which will maximize longevity for clients and also maximize their age pension entitlements.
Mm. And do you find that is a comfort piece, like that sort of trade-off, or the fact that we're only going to be doing this with a small amount of your money, is enough to get them to make these decisions, or do you have to do a little bit more work on that?
Yeah, it's just really reinforcing that only some of the money goes towards this IRIS layer and the rest remains liquid environments, account-based pensions, where the funds are still accessible for them. So it's just really putting the clients to ease so they know that they still have access to the capital, which is very important for retirees. So we're only going to be investing a small portion of the retirement savings towards these type of solutions.
Yeah.
And I think what we've definitely seen as well, Tanya, is that you kind of touched on, there were some perceptions of what these products were going back in time. The IRIS solutions that are now available on platform like MLC Retirement, Boost on Expand, they have a lot more flexibility in terms of the different options available. And definitely what we see most advisors doing with the pension phase option is they do take up the death and exit benefit that's available for the option. And if they're part of a couple, they do take up the spouse option as well, because it means that if something does happen, if they do pass away early, then the spouse receives the income for life.
Okay, great.
If they don't have a spouse, then they receive the maximum amount of death benefit available. And in the early phases of retirement, the capital access is quite generous. In the later phases, it does become a lot more restrictive. But that is really what the government is imposing as a trade-off for that additional age pension entitlement that people receive in the early phase of retirement.
Yeah, fair enough. And I think that concept, right, is important to get across to clients, right? Because, they want the access to the age pension. They're probably going to get it at some stage, especially if they're sort of in that middle tier. And, you know, it's important that they see some exposure to that, but at the same time, that the flip side is the government's going to sort of cause you to spend your own money as part of that, which, you know, a lot of people get really frustrated about, don't they?
Harry, I think, touched on like a really powerful sort of psychological effect of how we've conditioned people. Like, we have conditioned people to save money, right? Like, we say to them for like 30, 40 years, you got to save money, you got to be disciplined. And then all of a sudden we expect them to immediately spend it. My mum has lived off the age pension for most of her retirement. She saved more in her bank account during retirement than she ever had during our working lives.
Crazy.
And so it's the psychology that people are conditioned to that ultimately the role advisors play in making people feel comfortable and confident to enjoy their best life in retirement. Like, I cannot overstate enough the transformative effect that can have on people's lives, like to know that you've got someone looking out for them, and to know that you've got these different layers of income that will be able to protect you in different scenarios. Like, it's amazing when you see the impact that advisors can have on people's lives in retirement, I think.
Yeah, well, obviously Harry and I are advisors, so we see that every day, and I think anyone listening can attest to that. And so I guess now we're looking at this big opportunity ahead for advisors, given, you know, 1.2 trillion people, dollars, I guess 3 million people, not 1.2 trillion. We don't have that population number in Australia, but we've got a large volume of people retiring over the next decade. I think I read in the report it was something like 685 people a day, which I thought was insane, right? That's huge numbers of people. What are the opportunities for advisors? And I'd love to hear from both of you, because I think you're each going to have a different perspective on what the next decade brings and what we need to be thinking about, and how we start opening up these discussions as an advice community. Harry?
So the opportunities, those numbers are pretty interesting, aren't they? To say that there's 3 million people retiring over the next decade, then for financial planning, this is really the golden age for us now. There's a whole lot of clients which we can really help them put their minds to ease and allow them to really be able to enjoy their retirements. So from a business perspective, there's a lot of opportunities there where we can sit down with our clients and really help them achieve their financial goals. Now, as financial planners, I feel like we need to really empower our clients so they're confident enough to go out and spend money in retirement. So everything we've spoken about in today's session is really about allowing clients to really have that freedom to go out and enjoy their retirements.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's really important work to educate them, keep the discussion going. I think clients don't need to hear this stuff once. They need to hear it every time they're coming in for a review, or that they're even when, like you said, in their 30s or 40s, when they're thinking retirement is 20, 30 years away, the sooner we start touching on the need to plan for retirement and how to have a confident retirement, that's probably a really important confidence piece as well. And from your perspective, Ashton?
Yeah, I think there's really two things for me. One would be from sort of a national opportunity perspective. I just keep coming back to, you know, what a wonderful thing it would be if all Australians felt confident to spend in retirement, both from a lifestyle perspective, but also from an overall economic opportunity perspective. Like, we've got a lot of younger Australians right now that are wanting to, own their own home and earn an income so that they can have a comfortable retirement one day. And so how do we get, all the money recirculating in the economy to create more economic opportunity for Australians? I think that's a wonderful outworking of Australians feeling more confident. And then I think, I think about a conversation that I had with an advisor recently who had a client who was over the age of 100, right? And the daughter of that client actually became an advised client for the first time at the age of her late 70s. So I think increasingly you're seeing these scenarios where advisors are there for the client's lifetime. And by being there for the client's lifetime, it creates more advice opportunities for the family unit over time. And I think increasingly you're going to see more and more advisors that are servicing multiple generations of clients. Single advice relationship. And I went and did some research about how many Australians are over the age of 100 right now, just to sort of sense. There's about 5,000 Australians right now over the age of 100, but it's going to grow to 50,000 over the next 25 to 30 years, right? And so I just think how amazing would it be if we had 50,000 older Australians all with an advisor that was supporting not just them in their later ages, but also their whole family unit.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. That king is going to be very busy writing those centennial letters, isn't he? I
hope that's he's
got that on a template.
We'll get RSI.
That's right. But, I think it's a really good point just to end on is, that example of your client coming in the late 70s, the first time they're seeking advice. We've had a few of those just over recent years. I wouldn't say going back any longer than that. We saw people very often, but it was actually they were receiving inheritances at a later stage because traditionally people received them a lot earlier because people weren't living as long. But now that we're seeing generations live into their 80s and 90s and beyond, 5,000 of these people are still going at 100, which is fantastic. What we're seeing is later inheritances coming through. So people might have spent down some of their money, been saving and squirreling away for their early retirement and suddenly coming into wealth at a later stage. And again, the same cycle, right? They're not sure how to have the confidence to spend. Have you seen that a bit, Harry?
Yeah, quite a bit. I think one thing we're probably seeing at the moment is this transfer of wealth, which is a big theme in our industry at the moment. And you have the baby boomers who've done really well, worked their whole life, built up wealth, and over the next 10, 20 years, that money will eventually be transferred to the next generation. But I think the biggest winners here are probably the silent generation, and they're really the unsung heroes because they're the ones who originally went out, built the wealth, and created wealth for themselves. And we're seeing at the moment, like you said, Tanya, that wealth is now being transferred to the baby boomers. So as they pass on, family homes are being sold. There could be some savings there as well. Clients are looking for advice around how to invest this money just to maximize their investment opportunities. There could be some Centrelink strategies, perhaps gifting some money to the family, to the kids. So the financial planning industry at the moment is quite a good time to be here. It's keeping us very busy, as you would imagine, Tanya. It's a great time to be a player.
Yeah.
It is.
And I think that was also why we recently invested in our Centre of Excellence, because we really wanted advisors to have more tools in their toolkit
to manage these new and emerging scenarios in retirement. It's not just about planning for the individual. It's also about planning for the whole family unit. And so the Center of Excellence was really a way to enable the best quality advice in retirement and to also enable those intergenerational wealth transfer moments as well.
Yeah, fantastic. And I think the advice community has always been such a good industry at sharing our knowledge, encouraging others, taking time to talk to peers. What are you doing? How do you tackle this problem? I've got a client who's got this scenario. What would you do? I think that's where, as an industry or profession, we're really excelling at sharing our knowledge for the best of everybody, because we're all driven by this desire to help people. So we want those best outcomes for them. Yeah. Fantastic. Well, I think that's probably brought us to the end of our conversation today. Before I let you go, is there anything anyone would like to add?
I still need to go first. Yeah.
I think, like, for me, again, it comes back to confidence and clarity. Mm. I think Australians really deserve the best possible retirement. We know that we're now at a moment where this is going to be an increasingly relevant conversation, not just for advisors, but the whole Australian community. All of those Australians retiring over the next decade, each of them deserves to get access to great quality advice and help to help them navigate and live the retirement of their dreams, ultimately, I think.
Correct. I think as advisors of all, I think it's important that we're looking beyond the numbers. So with what we've spoken about today, a structured income framework really provides clients with the confidence knowing they can spend money in their retirement and be able to enjoy the fruits of the labor. So I think the reason why we exist as advisors is to be there to support our clients with their financial goals.
Yes, well, I think retirement philosophies are going to be on everyone's agenda in the near future. It seems like the buzzword, but makes complete sense when we know these 3 million Australians are coming through. And I think if we can have consistency around how we bring up these conversations, address these issues, it doesn't matter whether a client's seeing an advisor down the road or upstairs, in Harry and my case, they're all getting professional advice with great solutions for this best outcome for them, which is really fantastic. Thank you so much, guys. I think it's been a really helpful conversation, and hope everyone listening got a lot out of today.
Thanks, Tanya.